morning and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. I have two guests today, the co-editors of a newly released anthology of Alaska women's voices. The collection spans 25 years of essays, interviews, poetry, art, and photography that appeared in the quarterly journal Alaska Women Speak from 1992 to 2017. The names of many of the contributors are familiar. Nancy Lord and Joanne Townsend were writer or poet laureates for the state of Alaska. Others wrote or created artwork from their perspective in the media, community activism, the arts, or politics. So the anthology includes writing by Libby Roderick, Arla Sturjalewski, Amy Bolenbach, Diane Barsky, Diana Tillian, Elise Petkotak, Jane Anvik, Sarah James of Arctic Village, journalist Rhonda McBride, outdoor adventurers like Karen Jetmar, Rachel Holsworth, and Iditarod musher Dr. Beth Baker. Other Alaska women were interviewed and written about, women like Susan Butcher, Dee Dee John Rowe, artist Gail Nybrighi, Fran Ulmer, Loreen Harrison, Elizabeth Peratrovich, EAC speaker Marie Smith, conservation activist Celia Hunter, Alaska Native healer Rita Blumenstein, even singer Judy Collins when she performed in Alaska. So the anthology is a bit like a giant 25-year reunion yearbook for all women living and working in Alaska from 1992 to 2017. Significantly, there will be many names you won't recognize, ordinary Alaska women from all walks of life, writing about what mattered to them most, a new start in a new place, memories associated with berry picking, or the joy of hiking with your dog. A traditional hallmark of the publication was inclusivity. You could write about whatever you wanted as long as you did not denigrate your subject. So today we'll talk to the anthology editors about the life and history of the journal and how they pulled together this anthology. And to give a feel for the heart and soul of this anthology, we'll share excerpts from a few stories. As always, we welcome your questions and comments throughout the show, so I'm going to share our phone number. if you're in Anchorage, join us at 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And we also can welcome email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right. Now let's get down to the business of our guests. I'd like to welcome Mary Lee Hayes. Hello, Mary Lee.
Hello.
Mary Lee's in Eagle River. Mary Lee, how long have you been in Alaska?
I've been in Alaska since 1981.
That's the year I got here, Mary Lee.
Okay.
And you are a retired nurse, am I right?
That's right. I did nursing in Alaska from that time until I retired in 2014.
Okay. And Angie is joining us today from New Mexico. She's been a longtime Alaska resident who has retired to New Mexico. Angie, when did you get to Alaska and what kept you there?
Well, I moved to Alaska in 1986 for a job, and I liked it, and I stayed. I lost the job, and I kept doing other things and had fun, and I retired out of Alaska in 2014. Came to sunny New Mexico. No snow to shovel.
Some things you're grateful for, right? Well, yes. I want to describe this anthology to people because it's big. It's I think I heard on another interview you guys did that it weighs more than 2 pounds. And it's, you probably know the dimensions, but it's like a coffee table size book. It's got beautiful stock. It's just gorgeous. And the cover is a piece of artwork that appeared on one of the journals by Teresa, is it Escone?
Escone. And her birch contours was chosen. She has had other color covers for our journals, but this was chosen with the snow scene and the birch and colors of the sun in the background just sort of sparkling on the snow and in the sky. Beautiful artwork that we're just so happy with it.
Yeah, it's very, very beautiful.
One of my friends said the cover just sucked her right in. And then she got into the book and she was hooked.
Right. You know, it really has that sense of place for Alaska. And that is just validated when you get into the content and start reading people's stories. I mean, it makes you feel like Alaska is a separate and special place. And these people have appreciated it. And Let's talk a little bit, Mary Lee. This was a labor of love, you told me. You and Angie are unpaid editors, I guess you could say. You donated your time. And if you make any money on it, what will happen to that money? So, Mary Lee, tell us a little bit about the anthology itself.
Okay, well, it is totally nonprofit. Any money that's received from sales will totally go into the production of the book. We worked on it for 4 years, and it was a labor of love. We are not going to have any money ourselves, and we have always followed that with Alaska Women Speak. It, too, started and was an all-volunteer journal. We cover just the years of 1992 through 2017, and we were an all-volunteer group, and it continued. We were able to continue publishing quarterly for those years, and it continues today. Its format is a little different than what you see in the years that I was one of the managing editors, and Angie was also, and much of the design is due to Angie Slingluff's wonderful design and layout effort that she put into it.
Right. There's a lot of pictures, and there's full-color plates in here that have different covers. In fact, there's another Teresa Asconi piece that's called Poppy Potty, and it's an outhouse that is just covered with painted poppies. It's really, really fun and very unusual. So, you know, where did the idea for the anthology come? And maybe I'll start with you, Angie. Were you just sitting around in New Mexico thinking about it? Or how did you and Mary Lee embark on the idea that let's save 25 years of the journal?
Well, I think Mary Lee deserves the credit. She had the idea for doing this book. And when we first started talking about it, we thought, oh, maybe 100 pages, 150 pages. And the next thing we knew, it's a very large book, weighs 2 pounds, 14 ounces, is 8.5 by 11. And as Mary Lee said, it's a lovely coffee table book. The journal itself, I think Mary Lee should address that because she was around when it started in 1992 with a feminist conference. So maybe, Mary Lee, you want to talk about how we got started?
Well, yes, I happened to go to the first Anchorage Women's Feminist Conference in 1992. Three women got together, Susan Johnson, Dorothy Jones, Karen Carlisle, and decided that they wanted to start a women's journal. They were of the age that they could not continue it, and they had a workshop. And I went to the workshop and began to meet with other women in Anchorage and put together a journal and started publishing quarterly that fall. And for a volunteer group, different ones coming and going, to have lasted for all the years that it has, now it is on 28 years, is just simply remarkable. We chose a mission statement, and I don't know if you'd like to have me read a few words from that.
Absolutely. Yes, please do.
Okay, well, we decided to have a mission statement in each journal just so it was clear for others. And we said it is a journal devoted to the exchange of ideas, literature, art, and heart talk, as well as a statewide update of women's political and social issues and activities. We desire that all content in the artwork and written material will reflect a commitment toward equality and personal empowerment. And we provide a feminist and multicultural perspective, serving as a source of connection and inspiration for all women. And AWS will not publish anything that denigrates any animals, people, or the environment. And that guideline was what we used in every journal. We also developed themes, and that gave writers and artists a focus.
You know, Mary Leah, I'm going to go back to the themes in a little bit, but I want to just do two things. One is, the journal was born at a feminist conference, but the name feminist does not appear in the journal title or in the anthology title. And that was discussed apparently, and for a reason, feminist wasn't put in there. Could you talk a little bit about that historically?
Well, the women that started it, they did not want to exclude anybody, and other managing editors, such as myself, carried forth the idea of just being a journal as a voice for all women from all walks of life. And that was the message that we wanted mostly to have, to not exclude anyone. You did not have to have any particular political or religious beliefs or followings. And the managing editors that followed myself, such as Angie, we all worked in conjunction with that and were very comfortable just representing women's voices.
Mm-hmm. You know, Angie and Mary Lee and I met to get ready for the show. First, we had a chance to meet in Anchorage, and then we also met several times over the phone just to talk about it. And I kept picking at this and saying, God, how can you go for 25 years without a big fight or a big, you know, you managed to kind of keep yourself on course, navigating through what must have been lots of, you know, differing points of view. People wanted to do different things. And they consistently said, you know, we didn't want drama. We didn't want conflict. You could bring anything into the journal. As long as you know, Mary Lee said, you didn't denigrate a person or an animal or, you know, anything like that. So I kept thinking, I can't imagine that there weren't, you know, discussions. And even I found in the beginning of the journal, Susan Johnson, I think, wrote a piece about kind of wishing that they'd had feminist in the title. Now, you know, now after all these years, you know, thinking about it, maybe we really should have done that, you know. So there were differing points of view. And I kept hammering out, you know, because I think we live in such uncivil times right now. You know, we can't seem to sit down and have a conversation without demonizing the other side or being suspicious of the other side. And so the harmony that was represented in the journal, both in the production of it and what comes out of its pages, was really remarkable. And I'm going to read just a quick piece here. This was written actually by Mary Lee, and she was writing about one of the longtime supporters of the journal. And she writes about conflict here. Carol Mercer is the person she's writing about. And let me just read this paragraph. Carol displayed a steady, easygoing manner for our group. She was not one to complain or bring negativity to our endeavor. Sometimes we were faced with rather unexpected decisions like, should AWS publish any unseemly four-letter word or swear words? Should we publish a man's letter that sharply criticized us for not including men's perspective on this or that? What about this artwork that showed a nude woman dancing with a moose? Was that okay to include? Various debates were had, and yet together we would come to a conclusion. Carol's calm and kind words added to these decisions, often with humor and a hearty laugh that contributed toward us relaxing with our interesting position of power. So I'm going to invite both of you to just comment on that. I'll start with you, Angie. I guess, you know, what can you tell us about how you managed to keep, you know, the hair on the back of your neck down and, you know, different points of view come into the journal, you know, and just not dissemble into the kind of discussions that sometimes can break up a group. So, Angie, can you add anything to that?
Well, I think part of it is Mary Lee's personality, that she's easygoing and easy to get along with. I occasionally would interrupt her and frustrate her, but we didn't let that stop us from moving forward to make this book. And in terms of my time in the journal, I mostly did layout, rather than making decisions about what was included. I made it fit in the pages, and I made it look good. And that was the easy part for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't. I don't think it ever caused conflict. The Naked Lady is a caricature, not a true naked lady. It's art by W.D. Barry, and it's a very nice picture of the lady and the moose.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my thought about that.
Yeah.
Easygoing.
Mary Lee, are you going to take credit for being the smoother outer of issues?
Well, I was managing editor for 8 years, and we're talking of 25 years that the anthology covers. And if you look at the themes that are listed in the back, the themes do not promote controversy. Women and their health, or women and their horses, themes like that, and that would have women have a focus to submit articles and poems and pictures about their horses. Those weren't political or controversial topics, and thus we did get many variations on a theme. For instance, one of them was on, you know, extra baggage, and Angie often said, I can't believe the amount of articles and viewpoints we get on a topic such as baggage. Some are talking literally about a trip with extra baggage, and then someone else might have a long emotional poem about the baggage of a lost relationship. So the themes themselves did not provoke persons to write of controversy.
Well, that's really interesting. It makes me want to tell our listeners that one of the treasures in the book is going to the back of the book where you can look up by alphabetical name. You know, you want to see if somebody has a piece. Did it get collected into the anthology? You can look them up alphabetically in the back. You can also look at the themes. There were themes. There were 100 issues. I think 98 issues, you said, Mary Lee, because there were two journals that maybe didn't come out on time or ever, but they were quarterly, so four times a year, and 25 years, you've got 98 themes, and they're all listed in the back, and they also, you know, have the, you can see quickly whose piece from that issue is in the anthology. So it's really easy to use. Another thing that I found surprising and interesting was that you appreciated your advertisers, so you also list your advertisers, you know, and to me, again, that's part of the memory of Anchorage, early Anchorage, or even just knowing what businesses supported this enterprise that was such a labor of love. So I think that you told me that you essentially covered your costs when you were journal editors, and as anthology editors, anything that you make is going to go back to the cost of producing it. Do you have any idea what the cost was of the anthology?
A whole lot.
Megabucks. We should mention the publisher here, because it is Ember Press out of Palmer. How did you find your publisher? Mary Lee, you want to go? Or Angie, who's got that story?
Well, Angie sent a list of publishers in Alaska to me, and we just talked about, hey, this is locally in Alaska, and Kayleen Sullivan Johnson couldn't have been better in dealing with us, because Angie and I thought we had the book done quite a while before it was done. We had a lot of, you know, editing and proofing and so forth, picture adjustments. Angie is just such a whiz on that we could put pages together and send those in then to Ember Press, which couldn't have been a better group to work with.
Well, it's interesting to me that because you can see that they valued the content, and I imagine the journals are probably in an archive somewhere, but here is a very easy accessible way to catch up with many famous Alaskans, and also, you know, regular Alaskans about what they think about living in Alaska. It's just really, really Really wonderful. So guys, we need to take a tiny break here. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Mary Lee Hayes and Angie Slingluff. And you are listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We're here today with co-editors of the Alaska Speaks, Alaska Women Speaks anthology, which just came out. I'm here with Mary Lee Hayes and Angie Slingluff. And I guess I'm just going to share our phone numbers one more time. If people contributed to the journal over the years or remember reading it, buying it, and reading it, you know, we'd love to hear from you. So if you're in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752, or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. I want to spend some time sharing the content in the book, but before we do that, we've got a caller. Beth Baker's on the line. Hi, Beth.
Hello there, Kathleen. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Where are you?
In Eagle River.
Oh, you're home in Eagle River. Okay. For some reason, I thought you might be down in Seattle. Beth, you're one of the people that had a story in here about your Iditarod adventures. And I reached out to you to say, hey, we're having the anthology on as a subject of Hometown Alaska, and I'd love to hear from you about, you know, what you think about being able to get something like your story published in it, and also just the significance of having a publication aimed primarily at women and women's voices. So first, tell us about getting your story in and what it meant to you for that to do that.
Great. Yeah. I'm calling in just to really say thank you and really grateful to Mary and Angie and all the people that worked on it. I did the Iditarod in 94, and I think I really can't recall, but I think Mary called me up and said, would you write an article? And I sort of thought, you know, I'm not a writer, I don't have time, why in the world would anyone want to read it? You know, I was really, I think, resistant to the idea. I think Mary might have even had to call me up more than once, or even if I told her yes, that I hadn't written it yet, and she called me up and said, have you written it?
You were one of those.
I really needed a nudge. And, you know, and it was written in 1994. I actually reread it this morning, and it brought back memories and feelings that, you know, I just wouldn't have if somebody hadn't nudged me. And so I'm just really grateful that she did that. And I just think, you know, reading other women's, Alaska women's poems and stories, it's invigorating, it empowers, I think it challenges to live more fuller lives. And, you know, I think, you know, things like, you know, the Me Too movement, you know, showing and sharing stories can heal people, and it also hopefully, you know, heals the culture. I just think women, Alaska women especially, have some great stories to tell, and I appreciate Mary and Angie for, you know, getting people to do those stories and for all of us get to share and read them.
Oh, thanks, Beth. I really appreciate that, and thank you for taking the time to call in. I just, I am really smitten by the book and think people will really find it a pleasure to go through. And for me, you know, just discovering different Alaskans I'd read about in the newspaper or, you know, watched on television, or there's that angle, but then there's also just the richness of everyday Alaskans writing. So thank you, Beth. I'm going to welcome Libby Roderick onto the phone. Hi, Libby.
Hi, Kathleen.
Welcome.
Thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Well, I think I have the same question for you as I did for Beth, which is, you know, you had a—I don't know whether it was song lyrics or a poem, but I've read it. And how did that come to be in the journal? And then, you know, tell us, what does it mean to you that this journal existed for women and still exists? It's still coming out, but now we have an anthology of 25 years of it. So help me.
Sure. Well, you know me, I've done a lot of interviews, so I'm going to do the annoying thing of framing it the way that I want to frame it.
Oh, go ahead. It's allowed on Hometown Alaska.
I also want to just say super thank you to both of you for the work. That's amazing and incredibly well appreciated, and just thank you, thank you. It's an astonishing labor of love all the way through all those years and now again. So, well, what I remember about it is I think I was called up by somebody and say, hey, we want to put one of your songs in here, can we? And I said, sure. So it is a song from way back then. The two comments that I thought of when I heard this, one has to do with if people, not you two, since you've put in so much work already, but, you know, I think it's super important to get women's voices out there. We just have selected a book for the university's Books of the Year program about women on climate, a whole diverse section, you know, group of women speaking to the climate crisis, because those voices are often not lifted up and put in the front like that. And that's critical right now. And women's voices are critical on every issue we have right now. I mean, the world is in a relational crisis of every kind. And so it couldn't be more important, in my opinion. So again, super thanks for the work, and hoping that maybe somebody, 49 writers, writer's block, you know, there's a bunch of amazing writing things going on out there, that this could become something that happens on a regular basis, you know, some kind of forum for women's voices to continue to be out front, because I really feel strongly that we are needed to lead right now. Native elders are saying that all over the world, right? That women, not that men aren't to also lead, but women really are critical in this point in the journey. So there's that. And the other piece that I just was so appreciative of when I heard about this was, it was a huge blast from the past. I had just had a conversation with a fabulous younger woman in this town about a possible history project. And one of the things we were talking about was the era in which this got started. There were so many women's institutions in this town, in Anchorage, in the state, multicultural, with Alaska Native voices and so on represented. Everything from the Alaska Women's Commission to the Alaska Women's Resource Center.
Yeah.
There used to be a women's center at the university, right? There used to be, you know, gatherings. There used to be a bookstore, right? And no, and people who weren't part of that, who are just 10 years younger than I am, or maybe 20 years younger than I am, they don't even know what happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is what a backlash looks like, right? I just think it's really great that that you all have done this work to preserve some of pieces of what happened.
Yes, I thank you, Libby, so much. I really love listening to you because you're so eloquent, and I appreciate, you know, your perspective on it. I'm thinking back to when I first got here. I got here at the same time as Mary Lee did in 81. I remember the Women's Bookstore and the Women's Resource Center. So, when I look at the first, the themes for the first several issues of the journal that are listed in the back of the anthology, the word woman is in it, so many of them, you know. It's almost as if we've taken a back seat here, or a quieter seat or something like that. So thank you. Thank you so much, Libby, for calling in and sharing your perspective. And I'm going to go to Carmen Davis, who's on the line with us. Oh, did we lose Carmen? Oh, OK. We just lost Carmen, but hopefully she'll call back. Carmen, we were just getting to you. I know Carmen has been a long time, and maybe Mary Lee, you can help me with this. She was a long time supporter of Alaska Women Speak, and has some pieces in the anthology.
Angie worked more with Carmen during those years.
Okay.
Or it was
somebody.
Our years of the book.
Yeah.
So through 2017. And Carmen was the president just before our current president, who is Pamela Simmons.
And, yeah, yeah.
Carmen has a very good business sense and helped keep the journal going, because with a volunteer endeavor, you can imagine you often, as many volunteer organizations do, need funds. So Carmen was able to keep the journal going at a very critical time there.
Oh, wow. Well, you know what? We have Carmen on with us now. Hi, Carmen.
Hi. Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Mary Lee. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
It's like old home week, right? So, Carmen, we were just singing your praises about your business skills. And, you know, what attracted you to support Alaska Women Speak Journal those years ago?
Yeah, well, so I'm relatively a newcomer to Alaska. I came in 2004 first came to rural Alaska. But so I've always been a writer, very passionate about writing, and did not do a whole lot of publishing. But I think I was in one of our local bookstores, and I saw the publication, and it just grabbed me as something like, wow, I have a chance at getting published in this, you know, versus some big national journal. Mm-hmm. So that's really what got me interested. And then I think after that, I wrote him a letter and said, I'd love to volunteer. And as you know, our little nonprofits need all the help they can get. So they took me on. So I helped out for quite a while and submitted and was published. And so, yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know whether you're up for it or not, but I noticed that you have a couple pieces in here, and I wondered if you would feel okay about reading one of them. Did you come prepared for that?
Sure, I can do that. Mary Lee had me read this recently, so I'll just pick the same piece. There's a piece called The Cabin. It's a poem, and just a little bit of context. It was, there was an issue that came out. I want to say the theme was Cabins We Love in about 2016. And so, and actually a cabin was on the cover of that one. They liked it for the jerry jugs on the side and the oil barrel. It's got an oil stove. So it's a little short poem, and I'll just read it.
Yeah, great. Go ahead.
Grandchild sleeps in a cardboard box covered with old screen in the cabin, where she grows and spends her summers and plays with two old Tonka trucks in the sandbox and plants seeds in the garden and young flowers in rusted coffee cans in spring, where eagles watch her catch her first fish from the river, while gray jays wait for her to lay table scraps on the old pancake tree. Her hip boots hang on the porch, and her fishing rods lie on birch branches, and her books, too, sit on shelves made of spruce and birch. She listens to the bats go with the night and return with the dawn, and watches brown bears pass in front of the cabin, where many dogs have trod, and hers do, too, where she hunts for squirrel, grouse, ptarmigan, and moose, and one day brings her children and grandchildren and passes along the way of life at the cabin.
Hmm. Thank you, Carmen. And obviously you were inspired because of your cabin. And I mean, it's such an Alaskan theme, people spending time out in the woods in some kind of a family cabin. So again, that's one of the things I loved about this book. It just evokes so much of the Alaska experience. So anyway, any other final thoughts, Carmen, to Angie and Mary Lee?
Well, I sort of walked with them on this labor of love. I was serving as on the board and leading for a bit of time there. But this is truly seeing it in come to fruition. It is truly an historical document of Alaska women's voices and perspectives. It tells the history of Alaska from the words of Alaska women. And it's just a one of a kind. And I say history because it's so recent, 1992 to 2017. But to me, I didn't realize there was this huge feminist movement that was happening in the 90s. People told me about it. Angie and Mary Lee talked about it. But this is tangible, and you really get it when you start reading some of the stories.
Yeah.
So very, very important.
Yeah, yeah. And Mary Lee, any words for Carmen? I guess you were collaborators for a long time or a more recent, shorter time, but, you know, what does Carmen represent? That kind of, I mean, it's like you open the gates and the floods come, talent comes, stories come, words come, artwork comes, and Carmen kind of is one of those voices for the journal.
Well, yes, I think she certainly is, and I'm very grateful that she has helped out in a big, big way. I, during those years, am just the senior advisor now, so I don't work with the board members that much,
mm-hmm.
And as a senior voice, but persons like Carmen, very, very important to the journals and to Alaska Women Speak.
Yeah, and to the nonprofit world, you know, keeping these seedlings alive so they can flourish, the kind of commitment that Carmen brought to it. And you know, by the way, the journal has one page which has all of the managing editors over those 25 years, and Carmen's picture is there. The current editor or managing editor, Pamela Simmons. We tried to reach Pamela to try to build the bridge to the contemporary Alaskan Women Speak, but we weren't able to get her. But at any rate, you can see all the faces of the women that kept this journal alive. So Carmen, thank you. Anything else you want to add?
I do. That's just representation. While I was on the board, I was surrounded by some amazing volunteers, and really it took everybody to make it. I was just happened to be the person, you know, in the leadership spot, but there are women all over who really helped continue it, donate to it, work hard to make it the very best representation of a women's voices. So there are many who have helped, and I think we all hope that it continues and it morphs. Because it's a living, you know, living document, living journal, but that it continues in perpetuity. So, So just a thank you to all the women who've made contributions and also volunteered and also donated to the continuation of this journal. So
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Carmen, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. We're going to take a break in a moment, but I'm going to take the opportunity to read one more piece because part of my goal here was to let people know the anthology is out, but to share a little bit from it. So I chose this piece. It's called Diamond Girl by Cinnamon Heart Moore Bovee. It came out in the winter 1998 edition. And the reason I liked it is it represents someone finding a second chance in Alaska, a new opportunity. And I think that is a very common story for Alaskans. So here we go. It's called Diamond Girl. Pain is my greatest motivator. I remind myself of this. This lesson became clear years ago when I married Daniel. When we met, I was assertive, enthusiastic, outgoing. I was in love with the illusion of a husband. He was my diamond in the rough. If I could just get him to lighten up, be more affectionate, and realize the sacrifice I made to make him happy, he would be perfect. What happened is I became manipulative, depressed, and my self-esteem plummeted. It was like I was a child again. Back in the country, walking down our dirt road, I would search for treasures. Something would catch my eye. A diamond, it must be. I would pick it up, run home, and start the process of uncovering its true splendor. I'd wash it up, polish it, and try to smooth out the rough edges. And then I would truly have a wonderful acquisition. Everyone but me knew I was adding to my worthless broken glass collection. After the pain of 2.5 years of marriage, I realized the only thing I can change is me. I deserve time and attention to create myself. It is time to take me off the back burner and start enhancing the beauty inside me. Wise women have told me, if I'm not the problem, there is no solution. I left my husband, my beautiful son Gray, and I came up to Alaska. It was the best thing I've done for myself in a long time. Now I have a new job at the Native Hospital. I've joined the gym, found a wonderful support group, and I'm beginning to shine. All right. So I again, I wanted to share that with our listeners. But before we continue on with some more readings. We're going to have to take a break. So you are listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. I'm here with Mary Lee Hayes and Angie Slingluff, who are the co-editors of a new anthology covering 25 years of the Alaska Women Speak Journal. The journal continues on today, but this is, I think, the first anthology that we've seen from this journal. And also, I'm just going to share our phone numbers one more time with listeners. If you want to comment on the journal, the anthology, or maybe you were a participant in the experience of keeping it alive and nurturing it, we'd love to hear from you. 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And, of course, we're watching email at hometown@alaskapublic.org, which, let me just say that we did receive an email from Sandy Harper, who said that back in the day, Cyrano's bookstore featured the Alaska Women Speak Journal, and, you know, as it came out quarterly each year, and that she really loved it and enjoyed it, and she wants to know where she can get the anthology. And I know, Angie and Mary Lee, the anthology is out, I think, at the Writer's Block and at Barnes & Noble. Do you know of any other locations?
You can contact emberpressbooks.org, .com, and order it directly from them. It's available on Amazon, and any bookstore that wants to carry it can contact Mary Lee or Kayleen Johnson at Ember Press and get copies for their store.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I have seen it out, and it is it's really magnificent and eye catching. So you'll know you're onto it when you see it. So I wanted to continue with this sharing a few of the pieces that are in the journal, because we can do that on the radio. We can read. We can't show the visual and the photography aspects of the journal, but we can share some of the words. So I'm going to turn to Angie and give her a chance to read a piece that she wrote that actually I really loved when I read it. It's called Give Me Shelter by Angie Slingluff. Go ahead, Angie.
I wrote this for the fall 2012 issue, Give Me Shelter. There are all kinds of shelters. Some are made of brick and mortar, logs and wood, canvas and blue tarps. There are disaster relief shelters, animal shelters, fallout shelters, bomb shelters. There are halfway houses and homeless camps. And then there are the kinds of shelters that are made up from human hearts, of love and compassion. Shelters for the homeless and the runaway, the victim and the depressed, survivors and heroes. I went to a funeral last month for a vibrant 22-year-old woman who took her own life. From the words used to describe her, it seemed she had found shelter with young people who were like her. It seemed she had found shelter in the pride of who she was and what she wanted to do for her community. She had already taken giant steps in changing people's attitudes about her and other young gay people. Nobody will ever know just what led her down the path of despair and depression that led her to take her own life. In my heart, I cried out at her memorial service that we cannot afford to lose any of our young people, gay or straight, white or black, or yellow or brown, rich or poor, immigrant or native. I want to offer the shelter of hope. Today is not tomorrow. If you give up today, you have no tomorrow. My sister took her own life at the age of 38. She left behind three teenagers who were hurt and confused by her choice. My sister never got to see them grow up and get married and give birth to her wonderful grandchildren. She never got to see them become successful adults. I am saddened that my friend's daughter could not find the shelter of hope. We who have lived a while and passed through storms and adversity need to offer the gift of hope to young people. There is life after 15 or 22 or 30. There are great times and great experiences to be had when you have the shelter of hope. My friend has the shelter of faith and hope that her daughter is in a better place and that they will meet again one day. I admire her courage to keep her hope after losing her only child. My wish for you is the shelter of hope.
Mm. Thank you, Angie. I really appreciate that. It speaks to the fragility of the human spirit and how it needs a lot of support. And again, that's what this journal has provided for so many women, a lot of support. I'm going to ask Mary Lee to read a piece, an excerpt, I think, from a piece, and it's got a fun story behind it. Before we do that, Mary Lee, I just want to point out that one of the things that struck me, you know, skimming through the journal and looking at pictures is how many pictures of women and their dogs are in this journal. And Mary Lee's story does include a long hiking adventure with her dog. So, Mary Lee, why don't you set it up and read that little excerpt that we talked about?
Uh-oh, Mary Lee.
Okay, well, apparently we're still connected with Mary Lee, but she's not coming through. So if we get her back, this is one of the challenges of doing a live radio show when the guests aren't in the studio.
you have to mute yourself, Mary Lee. Yourself on Zoom.
Mary Lee, you need to mute your Zoom. Okay. All right. So we're going to try to call Mary Lee back. Like I was saying, because of COVID, we have kept our studios pretty empty of guests, and we're connecting with them by phone. And, you know, it can be pretty challenging. We don't get to see each other's faces and develop that rapport that you have one-on-one. And yet I have to salute these guests for, you know, hanging in there and doing their best. I think Mary Lee and Angie connected by Zoom so they could see each other's faces. Angie's in New Mexico, Mary Lee's in Eagle River. And so to facilitate, you know, the communication and everything. So anyway, we'll see if we get Mary Lee back. But Angie, I might put you up again because we had another piece from you that we hope to hear from. And the reason I really like this piece is that I think you had a theme in one of your years about women that are challenged. And that brought to mind perhaps disabilities. Your piece kind of touches on that. And I'm hoping you can.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, Mary Lee, I was just setting up Angie to read Can You Hear Me Now? So let me just go ahead and let her do that, and then we'll return to you. And we'll have you read from your piece. But go ahead, Angie, go ahead and give us that.
The piece was called Can You Hear Me Now? And I wrote it in the fall of 2005. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Could you repeat that? Say again? Huh? To which some people respond, oh, never mind, it's not important. It's nothing. Forget it. Ask a child to repeat what they said, and they think they've said or done something wrong. And you've experienced our response, head nodding, yes, or uh-huh, to everything, or sometimes a no thrown in for good luck. The interested look, and the ultimate, that slight grin. Gail Hannon, a deaf Canadian performance artist, says, everyone wants to know what Mona Lisa is smiling about. We know. She couldn't hear a thing. I've been hard of hearing practically all my life. When I was in first grade, they told my mother I was stone deaf, but she didn't believe them. When I was in eighth grade, I got glasses, and it was amazing how my hearing improved and my grades went up. I was 22 before I found out that not everyone has ringing in their ears. People have many diverse ways of hearing. Some read lips, some read sign language, some have hearing aids in one ear or both, like me. Some use assistive listening devices like a pocket talker or an FM loop. Some depend on captioning to enjoy television. Some have cochlear implants and are able to hear for the first time in their life. Said one grandchild, watch out, Grandma can hear what we're saying now. I'm one of the lucky people, though. I was canoeing in the Yukon River with friends 2 years ago. I had my hearing aids taken off and put them in a container in my breast pocket under my life jacket. Do you know that wind makes a terrible racket in hearing aids, like blowing on a microphone? We landed in Eagle and went in for dinner at the restaurant. I went to put my aids in so I could enjoy the conversation, and they weren't in my pocket. I went to the canoe and searched all the gear. You know, that's why you won't catch any fish in the Yukon River now. They can hear you coming with my hearing aids.
such a positive spirit despite the adversity, right, Angie?
Absolutely.
Let's see. We have enough time. Let's have Mary Lee read. Set up your piece, Mary Lee, related to a long hike that you took. Tell us why you wanted to do it and give us an excerpt.
Yes, I believe the reading, many women have done the Skagway Trail to the Chilkoot Pass, but my couple paragraphs that I'll read for you. Yes, I came to see and feel the magic of the Chilkoot, named the Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park. But what intrigued me most, what gave me an incessant need to experience this area firsthand, was the story of a woman from that 1898 frenzy who insisted that her piano be hauled over the pass. What kind of pioneering woman was this? Not only must she have been brave and spunky to take on the hardship and dangers of this trip herself, but she must have possessed some kind of incredible determination in order to persuade other weary, worn gold seekers to assist in hoisting a piano up and over that long trail and steep incline. She would have to realize every step of the way that at any turn, the piano carriers could give up this load, leaving it at the wayside as so much other equipment was left. So Sally Dog and I spent the night listening to the wild winds howl atop the Chilkoot Pass. As snow beat against the little window panes, I felt sure that I could hear and feel the spirits of so many who had lost their lives in this very area. For myself, I felt a sense of spooky wonderment as I snuggled on the floor in my sleeping bag with Sally Dog beside me. I believe I also heard that piano playing. And just a note, the original Chilkoot Pass piano of this story is on display at Alaska Land Park, Fairbanks, Alaska.
Thank you so much, Mary Lee. I loved that. And I loved, I think there's a couple pictures of you and your dog. And I know so many people who either aspire or have done the Chilkoot Trail. And just having the story of the piano I think I read it that you actually ended up getting your own piano shipped up to Alaska after that.
That's true. My brother David brought up my 1916 Gold Brownson piano from the lower 48. So that's kind of symbolic for me.
Yes. So I'm going to read one more short piece, and then we'll be just about out of time. So we'll be coming back and closing. This is just a short piece by Edie Barber. It appeared in the Spring 2004 Journal, and now it's in the anthology. It's called What is Art? The ability to create, to be confronted with a problem and envision more than one solution, keeps me going from one project to the next. Each of the media I work in feeds a different part of my creative ego. Crazy quilting is my wild side, the nonconformist hippie chick from the 60s. Web design allows me to use my detail-oriented everything in its place and a place for everything mentality. If I never sell another quilt, never get another art show ribbon, never get paid for designing another website, I will still create. I can't imagine what it would cost to lose this part of myself. And so anyway, that was just a kind of fun spirit of a creator and a woman, the two sides of her brain, the crazy side and the disciplined side. So we've got about, I don't know, 3 minutes left here, Angie and Mary Lee. I have a few more questions for you as we wind down the hour. You know, what was it like for you together to put out this anthology? You've probably known each other for years, but you were in New Mexico, Angie. Mary Lee, you're here in Alaska. How did you actually get the work done?
It's rather remarkable that Angie and I were able to accomplish, with Angie doing layout while we talked on the phone. Now, after COVID, we realized the miracle of being able to Zoom so we would not interrupt each other. But it really is a minor miracle that we were able to do such a huge volume, because selecting from different writers, we wanted to do everyone. And of course, that was impossible over the course of 25 years, so many voices. But we had to settle on a selection that we could make into a book while we could still lift it. It was getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Lee would send me an article that had been typed up, and I would take it and put it in a page format. And as I was doing those things, pictures would suggest themselves, or Mary Lee would suggest a picture. And so that's kind of how the layout happened. It was over the phone and over Zoom. And unfortunately, using the inexpensive Zoom, you can't share your screen. So sometimes I frustrated Mary Lee by trying to tell her something that she couldn't visualize, or she was trying to tell me something I couldn't visualize. But we eventually came out with this gorgeous, gorgeous book. And it's all thanks to Mary Lee's stick-to-itiveness to say, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and also very much thankful for Angie's expertise in putting in pictures, because I believe in pictures. So this is not a boring anthology book. This book is loaded with pictures and lots of fun.
Oh my gosh, it's got full color plates, the cover is in color. There are black and white images inside as well, and sketches and artwork, but there's also a section of, many of them are former covers of the journal that are reproduced here. Beautiful pieces by Gail Nybrighi and Teresa Escone, and just really lovely. So if you want a big dose of Alaska, this book is a great way to get it. And it's also an interesting way to hear the voices of women. I want to, last question here, we probably only have about, I don't know, a minute or so. I'll go to you, Angie. You know, what do you think this journal offers Alaska readers today?
Oh, I think most definitely it's a journey down memory lane. I mean, for a long time Alaskans, a lot of these stories are going to bring back memories. For younger Alaskans, it's this is how it was and this is how we handled it, or this is what we thought was a good thing to do. And I might mention, since I have the mic right now, is that UAA has an archive of the journal, and the LUSAC Library has most of them. So if somebody wants to see the hard copy originals, check out those sources.
They can still do it. So
yes, and UAF as well. It was just taken to Fairbanks, to the University of Alaska Fairbanks archive.
Oh, that's good to know. Mary Lee and Angie, we are out of time, and so it's time for me to say thank you to the co-editors of the new anthology, 25 Years of Women's Voices, as they appeared in the Alaska Women Speak Journal. So that's Mary Lee Hayes and Angie Slingluff. Thank you so much. And also thanks to our callers and listeners today. Next Monday is Labor Day, and we hope you'll be out soaking up Alaska, because we will be, as Hometown Alaska takes a break. The following week, September 13, E.J. David will be back as your host. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Tobin Shelby was our audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.